Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The federal government shuts down. Plus, a conservative judge enters the Wisconsin Supreme Court race. And Republican lawmakers float their latest plan to legalize medical marijuana. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for October 3rd. I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
I'm Jesse Opoyan.
Welcome to Rewind, Jesse. You picked quite a week to be here. The federal government has shut down. So obviously we're starting there. We'll go back in time a little bit to Tuesday, right before the shutdown happened, just to remind folks at home. This is a breakdown in the Senate where the Senate needs 60 votes to try to get their budget across. They would need some Democratic votes to make that happen. They haven't gotten those. They got, I believe, two Democratic votes. One of those was not our own Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin. And so let's start with a little bit of video from our two senators breaking down kind of where they stand.
The path to keep the government open and stop health care costs from rising for millions is on the table. The whole idea of a shutdown is totally avoidable. If Republicans refuse to see what is right in front of them, then a shutdown is on them. And Wisconsinites will know exactly who to thank when they get that dreaded letter and their health care costs skyrocket. Or they see it simply stripped away.
We can begin ending this madness tonight by voting on a very simple piece of legislation. Eliminate Shutdowns Act. Again, it's very simple. All it does is, if we don't pass an appropriation bill for all of government or any department, we don't shut those departments down. We don't shut all of government down. We do literally what the state of Wisconsin has done since the 1950s. We just keep spending at last year's levels. I mean, how more common sense can you get?
All right, so Baldwin, they're talking about, you know, the sort of stance that a lot of Democrats have, which is that they will not pass a budget measure that doesn't, that includes the cuts to the ACA. And then Ron Johnson taking a sort of sideways step there, where he is talking about passing a bill that would prevent shutdowns in the future, kind of actually bringing a Wisconsin model where if we don't pass a budget here, previous levels of funding stay in place. And so the government of Wisconsin does not shut down, but the federal government does. That hasn't been floated. It hasn't passed. And so we are now in a federal shutdown. Today, the Senate is poised to vote on stopgap measures that have already failed twice. So if they fail again, they'll just go home for the weekend. The federal shutdown will continue. A big effect sort of as of today is that there was no jobs report, which normally comes out. The Bureau of Labor Statistics is one of the agencies that is closed right now. In the immediate this week so far, the vast majority of Wisconsinites haven't necessarily felt the effects of the shutdown. Mail's still going out. Flights are still taking off. Social Security checks, SNAP and WIC are continuing at least for the month of October. Maybe there will be some slowdowns coming up. But what are you kind of paying attention to right now?
Yeah, I mean, there's always the political angle to this. The two parties blaming each other with their own reasons for each. But then kind of wondering, is this something that does end up having an impact long enough that it can start playing into upcoming elections? I mean, you are seeing Congressman Tom Tiffany is running for governor. He is in Congress right now. You don't have any Democrats in Congress right now who are running for one of those offices. So you are seeing some Democrats kind of trying to go after him and tie this to Republicans. But, you know, the election's a long, long ways away, and this could be long forgotten by then.
Yeah, there is always that game of spin with a shutdown. And so you're seeing people call it the Democrat shutdown, the Schumer shutdown, the Trump shutdown, the ACA shutdown, right? All these, like, different names. And I think Baldwin right there in that video that we saw really trying to make the case that once people see changes to their health care, that they will have, you know, perhaps negative responses to Republicans. So we are seeing a lot of that kind of of blame game. And then there's also all of these kind of other political ramifications going on. We're seeing Trump cutting federal funding to Democratic cities and states. I believe as of today, he announced $2.1 billion in infrastructure funding for Chicago will be cut. So not necessarily something that Wisconsin is in the crosshairs of, as it did vote for Trump narrowly in the last election. But as a purple state, perhaps we are not as much in those crosshairs. And then there's also an unusual angle this time around, which is that the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, released this memo saying that instead of furloughing federal workers, they may actually be aiming to do these kind of longer-term layoffs, which could have effects here in Wisconsin as well. There's about 18,000 federal workers here. So lots to kind of be paying attention to and lots playing out. But again, it'll be perhaps these like next couple of weeks to see how long this lasts and how much political will there is among voters, especially. We also got some news in campaigns this week. Missy Hughes has officially joined the race for governor. And this was something that we could kind of predict because she left the WEDC 3 weeks ago, I want to say. And so there was a pretty good indication that she might be stepping down. And she reported that in her first week, she has raised $200,000 so far. I believe actually in the first 24 hours is what she said. And so where does she kind of stand in this increasingly crowded Democratic field?
Just keeps getting bigger and bigger. It's going to be like 2018 all over again. yeah, Missy Hughes, you know, before she went to the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, she was an executive at Organic Valley, which is a large dairy co-op, and has grown a lot, you know, over the time that she was there to be, I think, a $1 billion operation. So she's got business experience. She's got agricultural experience. She lives outside of Viroqua, so she's a rural Democrat, although not too far from, you know, some cities like Claire and Madison.
But I believe the first Democrat so far in the race who's not from Madison or Milwaukee,
yes,
and so bringing in
so
a different
perspective. That's a distinction for
absolutely.
Sure. And I think she's trying to present herself as a... you know, she says she's not going to go out looking for a fight, but she'll stand up for Wisconsinites' rights if the federal government is coming after them. She's talking about a Main Street economy, so I think really trying to get into that kind of business Democrat, maybe not talking as much about some of the social issues, not shying away from them, but maybe not making that the centerpiece of her campaign.
Yeah, you know, I asked her sort of a similar question around many voters say that they trust Republicans more than Democrats on business issues and economic issues, and she is very much running as this kind of economic-minded, as you say, business Democrat. And so I asked kind of how she stands out as a Democrat trying to sort of be in that lane. And she talked about not just that Main Street economy, but also some of these other like Democratic policies being good for business. So things like child care and affordable health care, that those are these Democratic kind of tentpole issues that she's tying into business. And so it'll be really interesting to see whether that message is able to stand out again in this kind of crowded field. But she does have some of those characteristics that make her a little bit different from the rest of the field.
She also has 70 sheep.
Yes, 70 sheep and I think 4 dogs.
Yeah, I believe the only candidate in the race with that many sheep.
Yeah, we should fact check that.
Yeah, yeah.
The other kind of brief election news that we got is that Fred Clark has announced for the 7th Congressional District. So this is a Democrat running for Tom Tiffany's seat, which he will be leaving. So again, we're seeing these kind of continuing domino effects as people make their various announcements, other people line up to take their place. And then, of course, the other big election news for the week is for the other election that we have coming
that one.
In April for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Maria Lazar kind of officially declared her candidacy. Again, this is something that there was a lot of speculation that she'd be getting into the race after Rebecca Bradley announced that she would not be running for a second term. There needed to be, or there was expected to be, a conservative candidate in this election against liberal candidate Chris Taylor. And so Maria Lazar, she comes from a Waukesha County appeals court. She announced her bid. She launched a video kind of attacking Chris Taylor as being part of this kind of liberal judiciary, saying that she would stand out from it. But of course, she has pretty sterling conservative credentials herself. She has served under Republican attorneys general, including Brad Schimmel, who ran last spring.
Yep.
And so we are seeing some kind of mirror or some rhyming of the last spring judicial election, including another Dane County judge against a Waukesha County judge. What else are you kind of paying attention to in this race?
Yeah, you know, the thing that's been also ramping up over the last few elections is the spending. You know, you really saw it with the Protasiewicz race because that was for control of the court, and it's been on a trajectory to just keep going up since then. But then it kind of blew up with Elon Musk getting involved, and, you know, does it keep going up from there? I'm not so sure that it does, especially now that the actual majority isn't necessarily on the line. So we could we could see a tamer race, but, you know, also, who knows? These have gotten pretty intense and expensive over the years. But, you know, I think with Chris Taylor's experience with Planned Parenthood, too, abortion is going to be a topic that, you know, is sure to come up.
Yeah, and again, sort of fighting words kind of right out of the gate, again, with the launch video where Liz Zarr kind of indicates that it is liberals who've been playing politics and she's going to be kind of outside of it, but then also said she's going to be running on her record of cases decided, which includes more anti-abortion kind of stances. She defended GOP-drawn congressional maps. Mm-hmm. So her record is a conservative jurist record. Chris Taylor then also immediately comes out calling her an extremist. So some of the same kind of dynamics that we have seen in these elections. And although the ideological control is not up for grabs, liberals are trying to get a 5-2 majority, which would mean that they have the court until 2030. Right now, they most likely have it until 2028, sort of, you know, barring anything catastrophic.
Right.
And so it'll, again, be one of these kind of high-stakes elections. It's also interesting this week, there was a little bit of movement in the ongoing court case against Elon Musk for his involvement in this last spring's court battle where he attempted to pay voters and then attempted to say it was, you know, just
not
Wisconsinites in general, right? And so there's a lawsuit indicating that it is a bribe. So that continues to unfold. And so all of this is kind of going on in the background. So I don't know. Again, I say this every week. It will not be a chill election here in Wisconsin. Another kind of pitched political battle took place this week as these two veterans' homes closed in Chippewa Falls and Green Bay. So this has, again, been sort of like a many months in the making kind of situation. So essentially these are recovery centers for homeless veterans, substance abuse prevention, transitional housing, job training. This program was projected to run a deficit of about $3 million. And so it went to the governor, made a request for state aid. Governor Evers put some money in the state budget that was taken out during the GOP-run JFC process. And so then the budget was signed. There's no money for these facilities in the budget. Then each party comes out and puts forward their own version of a bill to fund these centers. Neither of them have even gone to committee yet. And so as of this week, they are closed. The Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs says, you know, no veterans served by their facilities are homeless, that they've all been transitioned into other forms of housing. But it's been this huge political battle over who's responsible for the loss of that money and the loss of those programs.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I think a lot of hot button issues in the legislature, a question of, you know, everyone says they want to get this thing done. And then when it comes down to actually allocating the money or, you know, passing the bill that funds it, things fall apart.
Yeah. And so, and again, we see this kind of battle of who can spin it to be most in their favor for either electoral gain or sort of the public. And so Republicans saying, you know, yes, we didn't grant exactly what Governor Evers asked for, but we put all this other money towards, I believe they said, you know, towards other types of veterans support, and that the Evers request is simply too large. Obviously, Evers' team disagrees with this. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether these types of bills kind of continue to come forward or whether it stays as a once every 2 years kind of budget fight.
Sure.
But of course, veterans is always a winning issue for both sides. And so I think there's always a lot of push and pull there. Another political fight that we often see kind of interesting bedfellows is marijuana. And here in Wisconsin, it's pretty much assured that we will never have recreational marijuana as long as Republicans are in charge of the legislature. Assembly Speaker Robin Boss has said as much. He said, like, not on my watch.
Yeah.
But there has been a real GOP effort to push medical marijuana, medical cannabis. And so this week we saw the latest attempt, including by champion Senate President Mary Felskowski, who's been a champion of this issue. Tell us a little bit about the bill that they're proposing.
Yeah, you know, this has been such an interesting issue to watch over time. This was, I mean, you had only Democrats even on the medical marijuana bills, you know, 10 years ago, and now you've got Republicans introducing one on their own. And speaking of Chris Taylor, she was one of the biggest proponents for that when she was in the legislature. But yeah, you've got these three Republicans on this bill. It's come up before where, you know, they say, we can get something done here, right? Let's maybe meet in the middle. This would create, you know, an office to regulate the medical marijuana. You would have to register with the state. You'd have to have a valid diagnosis from a doctor. And then there would be certain forms, you know, of how you can ingest it. So not super limited on ingestion. You can do edibles, whatever, but no smoking. Which is more permissive than some, you know, that have been proposed before. So, and it would also be monitored in the state's drug monitoring system, sort of like opiates and other drugs that they've been looking at over the years. But, you know, this is something where I think the governor has been pretty clear. He doesn't want it limited. He wants this to be fully legal. And you've got in the legislature, you know, again, some Democrats who say it's not enough, it's too limited, we have to do this all the way. And then some Republicans who say, whoa, that's too much. So it's going to be a tough path, I think, in any way. And then in the meantime, you've got just because of the hemp legalization, all of this sort of unregulated THC products out in the state, you know, everywhere you go. So there is an issue, and there are a lot of takes on how to deal with it, but not a lot that kind of all line up in the same way.
I think there's a little bit more unity, you know, among the Democrats, where there is a pretty clear, you know, pro both medicinal and recreational stance. And as you say, Governor Evers has, I think, in every budget he's put forward, proposed legalizing in both tracks. But it's in the Republican caucus where you have much more division. Last session, we also saw a Republican bill in the Assembly come forward, which would have been much more limited. It would have been state-run dispensaries, I think four of them. It was extremely limited. And I remember speaking to Senator Felskowski at the time, essentially saying that she had not been consulted on this.
Yeah.
And so you can also see a little bit of intercameral sort of conversation happening there. One thing that's kind of interesting about this, too, you know, Speaker Voss has said that he doesn't want to see marijuana be basically a money-making industry, or cannabis, I should say. And this would be a little bit, this would raise some amount of revenue because the licensing fees for the growers, processors, testing labs, and dispensaries, each one of those steps would be state-regulated and licensed, and so that would bring in a little bit of revenue to the state. So that's an interesting kind of proposal. We will see how it moves forward. And again, we are kind of setting up for some interesting session debates, I imagine. Another kind of legislative change this week. Governor Evers signed a bill into law today that would make it a Class I felony to distribute or capture representations depicting nudity without the consent of the person depicted. That's already a felony. This would expand that prohibition to include deep fakes. Tell me a little bit about the process of this bill.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think this went through with pretty overwhelming bipartisan support. The legislature, we were discussing before the show, they're sort of in this race to try to both regulate AI and also take advantage of whatever sort of benefits it may have to offer and keep up with the rate at which it's growing, which is pretty much impossible. But, you know, this is a known problem, and it's something that they can do something about to say, you know, these deep fakes where, you know, it's whether it's putting someone's head on another person's body or, you know, manipulating in any way sort of intimate photos for the use of harassment or, you know, anything that hasn't been consented to by the person being depicted, making that a crime. Like I said, passed with a lot of support. But AI in general is something that they've been studying in the legislature, through the governor's office, through the legislature, just trying to figure out, again, like, how do they take advantage of it, but also how do they put those protections in place?
Yeah, and I think in Wisconsin, like in a lot of states, it really is that kind of game of catch-up because this technology evolves so quickly. So there was a bill recently passed that would make it so that in political ads you have to disclose if you use AI-generated content, and that comes, you know, years after that kind of started being in use in political ads. There have been a number of proposals that haven't made it through one chamber or another. The governor had a task force in 2023 to kind of look at AI in the workforce. And then I believe this week, maybe last week, Speaker Voss announced several of his task forces, one of which is on government efficiency and modernization with a focus on how the government can use AI to increase efficiency. And so we'll see some bills emerging from that. And then we will continue to see kind of, again, how the legislature tries to engage with this emerging technology. So, again, lots to look at there. And then our final topic for this week, a major report coming out that says that Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake, the two kind of notorious and troubled youth prisons here in Wisconsin, that they are officially in compliance with 50 court-ordered reforms for the first time since 2017 when a lawsuit was filed about the behavior of staff in particular in these places. So those reforms include that no youth inmates had been continuously held in solitary confinement for longer than 3 days, staff's use of pepper spray had been banned, reliance on strip searches and mechanical medical restraints had been drastically reduced. Staff training and support had been enhanced. Governor Evers is kind of praising the report, taking some amount of credit for it, him and his DOC. The ACLU had brought this lawsuit forward, and they kind of tentatively, I guess, praised the outcome, saying this is like the bare minimum that people should expect from their youth facilities. And all of this comes in the context of this ongoing kind of fight on both sides to, again, kind of reform the prison system with youth facilities in particular. A lot of the students there are disproportionately come from the Milwaukee area, and so there's been a lot of push to kind of shutter these particular facilities, move them out of the Northwoods, closer to where the kids come from. But this has been this kind of, again, pitched political battle. I think you covered when Governor Scott Walker signed a bill to close Lincoln Hills that was supposed to take place in January of 2021.
Yes, it was. Yeah, and that took a lot of work. You know, you had a couple of legislators from both parties who decided that this was really something that they wanted to take on and work through, and they didn't know exactly what the answer was going to be. You know, there were all these reports of problems, you know, staff being unsafe, inmates being unsafe, you know, kids in custody, and they got there. They got to legislation. They got to a proposal. They visited, you know, the facilities multiple times. They worked together, and it was just such a... You don't have a lot of these really kind of big moments covering the legislature where it's like, wow, everyone really came together to solve a real problem, and everyone feels good about it, and people are kind of crying and just having... It was genuinely an emotional moment, and then that was that.
Right, and so then Evers, right, I think, extended the deadline, and so this has been this, again, ongoing
effort. It's been tough, yeah. And, you know, it has at times become a little bit of a political football. I think, again, at the end of the day, it's something, of course, everyone agrees that this has to be fixed, and they're making sort of incremental movements. They are working on building some of those new facilities, but there's so many moving parts in the correction system, right, to determine, like, well, where are these kids going to go, and where are inmates and other facilities going to go if you close this down, and there's funding attached to that.
Right.
So the funding and deadlines... and actual infrastructure to work with.
Right. It's always that political fight. I believe the Evers administration has said that by the end of next year, there will be a new youth facility in Milwaukee or closer to Milwaukee that will host 30-some-odd students, I believe. But then this is also kind of part of this broader effort by the Evers administration to completely overhaul the correction system. They also want to close Green Bay and... Mm-hmm. Last year, the Evers administration proposed this kind of overarching program. It was a series of dominoes, I believe is how they described it, where every single institution needed to be closed or rejiggered, like, in the exact precise way in order to move people from this place to this place. And if it didn't follow that kind of exact chain of command, then, you know, the whole thing kind of wouldn't work. And, of course, Republicans then came out and said, well, like, then no.
Right.
we don't do a my way or the highway kind of approach to politics. And so, again, we kind of continuously see this particular issue. It's both something that there can be some bipartisan support, right? There is bipartisan support for example, closing Green Bay, but it's the how, it's the devil in the details kind of situation.
And I do think, though, this this development, the compliance with the consent decree, it could be a sign of progress to come, because without compliance with that, and they'll have to be continuing, you know, to comply with it, and they'll have to show that over time that, you know, this is something that's going to stick. It could eventually lead to that decree being lifted, and it could then give them more flexibility to make some of the changes that they'd like to make.
So that'll be something also to keep an eye on, and I think that'll also do it for us here at Rewind. Thank you so much for joining us, Jesse. I am Ani Van Wagtendonk.
I'm Jesse Opoyan.
And we will see you all next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.